This conference is being recorded.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Peter Ayers, the founder of Just About Perfect, and it's my great pleasure to introduce our speakers for today, Harry Tucker and Mark Hundley. The topic is Living as a Servant Leader, Igniting a Passion for Servant Leadership in Yourself and Others. Now, Harry Tucker has provided business strategy guidance, global technology adoption strategy, and leadership incubation guidance to Wall Street and Fortune 50 companies for over 25 years, and was the co-founder of an award-winning software company in New York. In his many years of consulting to Fortune 50 companies, Harry has come to the conclusion that many of the challenges we experience are not due to business or technology-related issues, but are in fact due to a lack of authenticity within ourselves and between individuals. This lack of authenticity impacts how we view ourselves, how we present ourselves to the world, and what we expect of the world in return. Harry is a contributing author to A Complaint-Free World, How to Stop Complaining and Start Enjoying the Life You Always Wanted, and the recently published 97 Things Every Project Manager Should Know, Collective Wisdom from the Experts. And Harry, joined in the call by our special guest, Mark Hundley. Mark is a licensed professional psychotherapist with a specialty in loss, grief, and life transitions. He's the author of Awaken to Good Morning, A Personal Guide to the Journey of Grief. So, Harry, tell us how we're going to become good servant leaders.
I thank you, Peter, and thank you, everyone who's joined us tonight. I think the key, Peter, is this. Servant leadership, as we discussed in a previous call, is the art of influence, and it's the art of influence that's done with a strong sense of humility. Now, all things being equal, what really separates the true empowered servant leader from other leaders is their sense of passion. And it's that sense of passion that can ignite the passion in others. And Mark and I are going to share some stories tonight around how that passion can really, really, drive results. And so we're going to have a little fun with this tonight. We're going to tell some compelling stories. Passion is an interesting thing because passion is a greatly misunderstood beast. And I was sharing some thoughts with someone earlier today about how passion is often misinterpreted or misunderstood. A lot of people who don't have a sense of passion react strongly when a passionate person enters their sphere of influence. And I'm known to be a very passionate person, and I used to apologize a lot for my passion. As a matter of fact, I was making a presentation to a number of churches a couple of weeks ago, and I made a joke that my wife and I pray for people who are on the receiving end of my passion. Zig Ziglar has a great quote. And like I said, I used to apologize for my passion, and then I came across this Zig Ziglar quote, and I stopped apologizing. And the quote goes, "I'm not going to ease up, let up, give up, or shut up until I am taken up." And that pretty much summarizes my thoughts on my passion and how important it is for me to live a passionate life. Passion is an interesting beast, as I said earlier. When it comes to incubating passion in others, there's good news and bad news. And I think both the good news and the bad news can be summarized in a quote that I found years ago that really resonated with me. And it's a quote by St. Augustine. St. Augustine said, "That which you wish to enkindle in others must burn in yourself." So if you want to incubate passion in others, or you want people to be passionate about stuff, whatever the stuff is, it's very important that that same passion burn within you. And if it doesn't, you're going to be incredibly frustrated when you wonder why the people around you either don't engage their passion or you can't seem to incubate passion in people. And I've worked with many clients over the years who have expressed a frustration with me. And they say, you know, these people don't get passionate about stuff, whatever the stuff is, the project or the vision or what have you. But when you explore the challenges with that person who has made that statement, you discover they're not passionate either. And so, you know, as goes the leader, so goes the team. And so if you expect folks to be passionate, then you have to be passionate. I talk to a lot of people over the years about where passion comes from. And a lot of people today, you know, look for passion in the latest or in the self-help book du jour. And there's lots of great books out there that talk about, you know, how can I become passionate? And I guess the one challenge I have for people who read a lot of these books is that they spend their entire life reading them, and they never actually have an opportunity to explore their passion or to let their passion loose. And as I say to a lot of people, I said, reading is great, but once you've picked that top three or four authors that really resonate with you, once you've absorbed all that material, you'll probably discover that anything else you read is probably the same stuff over and over and over. And so rather than being gripped, rather than igniting your passion, you're actually delaying the ignition of your passion. So as I mentioned earlier, we're going to share, Mark and I are going to share some stories in a little bit that talk about or that describe where our passion comes from. Gandhi had a great quote in his life, and he wrote, "My life is my message." And I think the thing that really resonates when you encounter a passionate person, you discover that how they live actually perfectly encapsulates who they are. So you don't have to wonder, you see a person living one way and you think, boy, I wonder what's important to that person, or I wonder what drives the person. I mean, the passionate person wears their passion on their sleeve. There's another great quote that I love by Howard Thurman. Howard Thurman was a very passionate person himself. If you read any stories about Howard Thurman's presentations, you will find that the common theme was that people would be swept away by his passion and his compassion. And Howard Thurman implored people to ignite their passion no matter what their passion was for. The reasoning behind it, of course, is that a life without or a purpose without passion is kind of like fireworks without the guide. You just spin around in circles really fast for a long time, and then you just burn out. And so Howard Thurman offered this interesting quote. And he wrote, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive." And, you know, so many people, when they're trying to figure out, you know, how do I live a passionate life, they're waiting for that perfect opportunity. They're waiting for that perfect alignment of the stars, so to speak, so that I can say, ah, now there's the opportunity that meshes with my purpose. Now I can be passionate. And what these folks need to understand is it's actually through living your passion that you actually create those opportunities. And Mark and I, when we chat in a few minutes, we're gonna talk about some individual stories, but there's an interesting collective story that Mark and I have gotten involved with that illustrates that perfectly. There's a story, I'm going to share a personal story to give an example of how our life stories fuel our passion. So I can't give you passion. You can't obtain passion by reading books. You can get some insight, but at the end of the day, It's your individual life stories will drive your passion. And so as I tell you this story, think about your own stories and look for the nuggets within those stories to help ignite your own personal passion. Some years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, I was the star witness for the prosecution in an international fraud trial. And there were companies from Canada, the U.S., the U.K., and Australia were all beating the living daylights out of each other, and I was the guy standing in the center of it all. And I remember one day I was driving up the coast, and I received a call from a lawyer in regards to the matter, and I wanted to concentrate on the call. So I pulled over on this beach to take the call. Now, it was a stormy day, and I was alone on the beach except for one other vehicle. And as I spent an hour on the phone with this lawyer, and as I spoke to this guy, I thought, now, how did I allow myself to get caught up in this? And the whole time I was on this call, there was a lady in this car next to me, and she was crying her eyes out. For the whole hour, she was crying her eyes out. And so when I was finished with the call, I started to drive away, and I thought, you know, something is wrong. And so I turned around, I went back, I parked beside her. Now, this is an intimidating situation for her. I'm not a small person. I'm 6'3" and not exactly small. Had my dark glasses on, of course, and I walked over, I knocked on the glass, and she opened her window about an inch. And I asked her if she was okay, and she said, yes, I'm fine. And I said, well, from where I stood or where I sat, it didn't look like things were okay. She said, no, I'm fine. I said, okay. I started to walk away, and I thought, nope, that's still not good enough. And I went back. Now, she was probably feeling very intimidated now because I had returned. She rolled the window down about an inch, and I asked her the same question if she was okay, and she said, fine. And I said, look, I said, I know you don't want to tell me. There's something you're not telling me. But I need you to know that there's people out there in the world who care and who can help you if you will let them. And so we talked for a couple of minutes. I gave her my business card, and I said, call me at any time. And I left. A week later, to the hour, I was driving by the same spot, and I realized I hadn't turned my cell phone on. And as I turned it on, it beeped, told me I had a message, and I started to listen to it, and I had to pull over. I couldn't listen to the whole message. And in fact, it was a message that this lady had left a little earlier that morning. And she tells a story that I still have on my PC and my laptop today. While I was sitting in my vehicle the week prior wondering how could I have allowed all this to happen to me, and how could I allow my life to get so complicated, she was contemplating why life was worth living. And so while I was trying to navigate my way through all of this legal mumbo-jumbo, she was waiting for me to leave so that she could finish what she thought wasn't worth having. And it reminded me that, you know, I made a small gesture. It took 2 minutes of my life, but I followed my instinct. My instinct told me that something was wrong. And by following my instinct, I made a difference. And so, you know, a lot of us have opportunities around us to make a difference. And it doesn't take a lot. But here's an interesting thing. When you do it, what happens is it does something to you, and then you become more alert and more aware of other opportunities. And you start to get you start to get a really passionate about just being more in tune to what's going on around you. When you realize how profound an impact you can have on someone's life, it does something to your passion. It ignites it. It your passion grows. And so what happens then is you start to look for other ways to live your sense of purpose. You start to look for other ways to manifest something that helps build that feeling. And the more you do it, the more you want to do it. And then you realize, you know, I can't do this all on my own. I need help from other people. So then you get really passionate and you start to collaborate with others. And you find, you discover your collective senses of purpose and the things that really makes each person in your group passionate about something. And you eventually you reach this critical mass where you can't be anything but passionate. And, you know, like I said, you can read this stuff in books, and you can read about, you know, step one, step two, and you start to think, okay, now, should I be at step eight here or step 12? Where am I in my passion building? But the truth of the matter is the stories in your life, when you really look at them, you look at them with a sense of gratitude and a sense of learning, and you ask yourself, what can I learn from this? Those little nuggets that you get from all of your life stories, and I know you all have powerful ones, can really ignite your sense of passion. I'm going to ask my friend Mark Hundley to step into the call.
Yes, sir.
Mark, you there?
I am, right here.
I really appreciate you joining us tonight, Mark.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
If you would, Mark, could you tell us your own story? I mean, you're a passionate man. You do great stuff. I was privileged to listen to the audio version of Awaken to Good Morning, and it's a powerful book.
Thank you. Yeah, let me, you know, and listening to you just helped me remember the roots of my passion as well. And, you know, it's been almost 21 years ago that my life took a huge change. It was a normal day. You know, you talk about your normal day with your person pulling over the side of the road and the woman just being in that place and you being in that place and paying attention to your intuition. My wife of 12 and a half years, Christy, was a teacher at a high school teacher at a local high school in a suburb of Dallas. And the morning was normal. It was average. There was nothing special about it. We were going about our business. She left 5 or 10 minutes later than she normally does, but we were only 3.5 miles from school. Inside of the brief time that would take her to drive to school, she was involved in a single car accident on her way to work. Our daughter was 7 at the time. When I received the call, she was desperately afraid, desperately scared about what she had heard in the conversation on the line. But to make a long story short on this end of it, within 2 hours of her from her departure from our home, the doctor came into the waiting room where I sat anticipating his arrival to tell me that she had indeed died. Now, that was an amazing, it was an amazing impact on my life. I had no earthly idea what I was going to do. I had no earthly idea where to go or what to look for. And I recall, I now have a terminology for what happened, but I recall as being so traumatized by that situation, by that information that occurred on that morning, that I physically dissociated from my body. I had kind of an out-of-body experience, and I found myself looking down on a surreal scene that I truly thought was being seen and viewed from a monitor of another room. And after just a brief moment, I had a voice inside me, and I always leave that open to the interpretation of the belief system of the hearer. But that voice said, Mark, there are lots of people here, and they don't know what to say, and they don't know what to do. And there are lots of decisions to be made, and the only person who can make those decisions is you. So get up and start making them now. And as I responded to that internal prompting, I found a sense of strength and peace that was well beyond me. And I began to do the next thing. And the reason I say the next thing is as I got up off that floor and sat on the sofa, I was brought to remember a sermon from my college pastor in February of 1974. And you can tell it was a significant sermon. And he said that there are mean times in life. Mean times are defined as those times that come and knock us off center, knock us off track. And we have to learn, first of all, how to deal with that event, and then how to deal with the time between times, the time when we're repairing and healing and working to put our lives back together in some semblance of normalcy. And And he said, in order to do this, you have to lean heavily on God or your faith, your belief system. You have to lean heavily on your family and friends or the support from others, and you have to do the next thing. And he illustrated that by saying, if you're in the middle of washing dishes and your mean time comes and you're, by the way, this is when washing dishes meant washing dishes, getting your hands wet in the soapy water up to your elbows. He said, if you have to be pulled away from washing dishes and take care of whatever's there, the next thing you do is finish washing the dishes. And that resonated with me because it said there's always, regardless of what takes place, there's always something that I need to do to stay connected to the present in order to do something purposeful and of meaning and value. And another, you know, you talked about a quote that always ties in with that with me is from C.S. Lewis in the Screwtape Letters, where he says, the present is the point at which time touches eternity, which says that everything that I do in this present moment has the potential, if not the guarantee, of having some sort of eternal significance one way or the other. And I knew that as I started focusing on that mantra, that do the next thing, that became what I needed to do every single day. When I told my daughter that her mother would not be coming home with us again, that was the hardest thing I had ever done. And then even harder than that was holding her, feeling her sob silently as she began to absorb the news. And that told me something. As I was going through that whole process, every single encounter that I had on that day and then in the subsequent weeks told me that when people lose people in life, that it affects multitudes of people, not just the immediate family, not just the one or two or three or four that are right there firsthand. I was made aware of the impact it had on the doctors. I was made aware of the impact it had on even the funeral directors, the emergency room personnel. I was aware of the impact it had on the community, on the school, on the high school students who were taught by my wife. I was aware of the impact that it had on the life insurance folks who worked with me to address the claim issues. I saw it, how it affected corporate bodies and groups of people, and it just made me so completely aware that there was not enough being done to address human loss issues in daily life, and that if we ignored those issues, that we were really creating an opportunity to have unhealthy relationships and unhealthy outcomes. So that really has driven everything that I've done for the last 21 years. It has opened up the doors to write a book, to speak to groups all over the country, to counsel individuals and families going through the transitions and the life losses as they experience them. It has opened the door for me to be a co-founder of a nonprofit that provides free group grief support to children, adolescents, and their parents who've lost loved ones. So the passion for helping people had always been there. And I won't say that the loss occurred to focus my passion, but when the loss occurred, I had the opportunity to choose to address it and embrace it. And in that choice of addressing and embracing that life issue, I found a passion that has helped me, that has helped countless others. And one of the key things, and I'm going to say this and I'll stop because I could talk on forever, but one of the key things that I discovered in my embracing my own experience and in the process of sharing openly and honestly with individuals and with groups, whether that meant tears or no tears, but sharing openly and honestly, opening my heart and my life and my mind and my soul and spirit to individuals, it gave them the courage and the power to begin facing their own core issues and begin to make a difference in their lives. And that blows me away. I love doing that.
That is a powerful story, Mark. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Do you find, Mark, that you're being passionate as you are, do you find that inspires other people to be passionate?
It really does. And you said earlier that sometimes people are put off by passion. I think sometimes people are frightened by it because they've not really experienced that kind of passion. But as I share openly and honestly with individuals, and I, when I begin to talking about what's going on, I really get excited, and I maybe turn a little red in the face. But as I do that, I see a change often come over the face of the individuals or the individual with whom I'm working, and it's like something clicks, and they suddenly say, "I want to find my passion." Sometimes they'll say that, but I can literally see it on their face. I want to be passionate. I want to find what makes life more meaningful for me.
And, you know, it's an interesting thing you say, Mark, and what you say really resonates with me, because I know I've been told many times that my passion is intimidating.
Yes.
And people find, or some people who don't know me will say that if they read my background, for example, I had someone last week who read my background, mm-hmm. and when I met them face to face, they said, "Wow, you're not at all like your background." And I said, "Well, what am I supposed to be like?" And when they saw the things that I like to do, the things I like to encourage others, to your point, they were very frightened.
Yes.
And they thought, "Oh, my gosh, how am I going to interact with this guy? This guy is like a nuclear reactor on overload or something."
Right.
Or I know sometimes the passion has been misinterpreted as either arrogance or overconfidence, or this nasty thing of one ego trying to wrest control from another ego.
Sure. And I run into that too. And part of what happens to me, and I have to stop myself and check myself, but when I'm talking with folks, there comes a point in time where I'll stop and I'll say or ask, "Now tell me what I have said. What is that stirring you? What is that causing you?" And I give them an opportunity to respond, because something has happened, particularly those people that I see it in their face. And I say, "You know, tell me what has happened in you as we've been talking, as you've listened to me. What did you hear? What did it do to your heart, to your mind, to your gut? What are you passionate about?" And it gives them a chance to either say, "Well, this is what I would like to be passionate about," or "This is what I'm passionate about," or "I don't know. I don't have a clue, but I want that."
And I love that, because you know, so often it's easy for a passionate person to just go on forever.
Yes, it is.
And
it is.
Now, I can't speak for you, but I can speak for me. And in my early days, when I finally said, "You know what, I embrace my passion and I'm just going to turn it loose," you know, there are many times when I still apologize to those people from many years ago. And because in the early days when I had less control over it, I mean, I feel really badly now, but it just steamrolled over some people.
Sure.
And
that passion is one of those things you have to learn to, you can't control it. You have to learn to manage it. And,
exactly.
And for me, that's the key is learning to manage the passion, because an unfocused passion can create a wildfire. A focused passion can create a fire block that keeps a raging fire from going jumping the road. You know, if you look at the firefighting analogy there. So it becomes very important to learn how to manage that passion and understand which parts of the passion are appropriate for which audiences.
Exactly.
And that's a real key.
It is. You know, I also find that being really transparent, or being as transparent as I can, is important.
Yes.
So that the person who's on the receiving end of my passion, or the person that I am passionately collaborating with,
yes,
understands my motives.
Yes,
So when they see that, you know, I am just passionate about collaboration, for example,
mm-hmm.
or passionate about making a difference. You know, it's not that my passion is manifesting so that I can steamroll your agenda,
right,
or so that, or you know, it helps people understand that if I vocalize an opinion passionately, I'm not doing it passionately because I believe I'm right and you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I embrace my opinion passionately and I welcome your opinion passionately.
Absolutely. I want to know what really, you know, floats their boat. I want to know what gets them going beyond the mundane, the usual. I want to know what they struggle with, because passion is also a struggle. There are times I look at my passion and say, "Where is this taking me? What is it that causes me to keep going this route? Because I don't see anything. I don't feel anything. I don't, you know, it's not happening like I anticipated it. And I say, well, this is ridiculous. And even being transparent about that invites people to say, well, I felt that way too. You mean it's okay to continue following your passion if nothing is happening? And I have to say, yes, it is.
I find as well, you know, in the spirit of transparency with people, and I was describing this to someone today, sometimes being a passionate person, you know, in addition to being a blessing, can be a curse.
Yes, it can.
And I know sometimes for me, when my passion just goes on something, sometimes my brain just runs away with something, and, you know, it's kind of like I'm turning and looking back at everyone else and saying, come on, guys, come on, let's go, let's go, let's go. And, you know, then I have to stop and I have to ask myself, now, they're not moving as fast as I am. And in my early days, I would get frustrated with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, you know, maybe my passion and their passion aren't the same. Surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or maybe I haven't communicated my passion well enough.
Right.
You know, maybe they're all standing there and they see me having run off and like, he didn't finish his story, he ran off.
Yes, that's where that management comes in. I know what it is. I see it, and I assume sometimes that others see the whole story too, and maybe they've only gotten a part of it, and they don't understand. They don't want to run after me toward, you know, a herd of elephants that if they don't know what we're doing. You know, they let me run and check it out for them.
Exactly. Now, I'd like to share a story, Mark, and I want you to help me tell this story.
Okay.
Because it's a story of a gentleman that you and I have never met.
Right.
And yet we've right. become very wrapped up in helping this person. And
exactly.
It goes back to something that you and I have touched on, and that is the importance of seizing or really gripping those essential nuggets that come out of our personal stories and letting it resonate. Could you do me a favor and repeat that C.S. Lewis quote again?
Sure. It says, the present is the point at which time touches eternity.
And when you said that quote, I had to tell you that the hair stood up on my arms.
Oh. Yeah.
Because, and I'm going to give a little background for this story. Back last May, I received an email from a gentleman who told an interesting story. Now, I receive hundreds of emails every day, and most of them are around, I want, I need, please give me, et cetera, et cetera. And most of them, I just delete. But this story was a little different. And the writer of this story told a story of a woman living in Germany in the late 60s. And she lived just outside of a U.S. Army base. And she was the unfortunate victim of wife battery. She was married to a man who beat her on a regular basis. And in Germany in the 60s, apparently, women's rights weren't as enshrined as we know they should be in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Anyway, a man, a U.S. Army serviceman, made it his business to save this woman from that relationship. And after having done so, he and this German woman became very close. They developed a relationship, and then suddenly he was shipped out to Vietnam. Now, after he was shipped out to Vietnam, she discovered she was pregnant. She gave birth to a son. And it was this son who reached out to me. And the reason he reached out to me was for one simple reason. The man who was his father, who had saved his mother from a battery situation, and to whom he wished to express gratitude, had the same name as I do. And he, in fact, was contacting every Harry Tucker he could find to see if each one of those Harry Tuckers was the one who was his father back in 1967, so that his sole purpose was to say Thank you. And I was so touched by this, I wrote a blog about it. The blog is called Creating an Oprah Moment. And I talked about in the blog how important it is to recognize that there are so many of these things swirling around us all the time. And that if we would allow ourselves to embrace some of these things, that they would in fact touch our passion. And we would find a sense of fulfillment in raising ourselves up to touch some of these. So that was the original story, and this young man and I, we chatted back and forth over the last few months. And then it occurred to me, I was interacting with Mark and a couple of other people, and it sort of came to us that, we can actually do something a little different. And Mark, I'll ask you to step in and kind of talk about some of the things that transpired after that.
Well, I think one of the first things that I recall is you sent me a direct message that, hey, do you think that you could help me find somebody? Here's what I need to do. I want to find someone who can help get the word out. I had just recently connected with a woman in Phoenix or in the Arizona. I think it's Phoenix area. Phoenix or Scottsdale. And she has been very involved in military support. And so I said, well, here's a lady that, you need to connect with. So I shared that information with you, Harry, and you visited with Susie, and Susie started visiting with me and started visiting with you, and we started batting ideas around. And suddenly we came up with this idea of doing a tweet blast and got all excited about forming and creating specific messages around this story. And I think you put together a site to which people could go and read the story. And we encouraged and asked our friends and our followers to retweet these tweets. And suddenly, and I'm going to let you take over here, but suddenly you're sending me some information about where retweets are coming from and what countries the information is coming from. And all of a sudden there's an interest to do a documentary on this story. It incubated within you for a few months, but suddenly when you put it into motion and people began to pick it up, it started taking on a life of its own. And in a very, since Friday, this thing is morphed and is growing larger.
And what's interesting about it, Mark, is that, you just mentioned that it kind of incubated in me for a little bit.
Yes.
And it was incubating inside. And I have a passion to serve and help others.
Right.
And so it kind of rattled around in my head, but I didn't know how it would resonate with my passion and how should it manifest.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is when you're open to your passion, that which matters to you, that which gives you that energy to drive your sense of purpose. If you use that sense of purpose, that sense of fulfillment as the litmus test, and you let these things rattle around in your brain, creative things happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, when I reached out to you and you connected me with Susie, and then all of a sudden I could feel this energy building.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it touched your passion, it touched Susie's passion, it touched some other people's passion.
Yeah.
And then, then that feedback comes to us,
yes.
And that fuels our passion even more.
It does. And as you're talking there, I'm reminded of something that I guess it just came to me one time. There's people generally who are doing something in life, who are making a difference, have a passion. And I have a passion, and my passion about my goal or about my target is greater than theirs about my target. However, a passionate person has enough passion to go around and spread to other causes. And it doesn't take them taking their focus off their own goals and passions and reasons for living. It takes just a brief snippet of time for me to, I've always said, if they'll just give me 15 minutes of their time, I can share with them my passion. And if it resonates, if it clicks, and they can do something to direct me in a place or send me somewhere that I haven't been able to go before, then their passion has helped create in me a new opening to express my passion, and then they also have a vested interest in that, and they will ask me about that. So it's really kind of fascinating. The more people who are out there who are passionate catch sight of this story, they want to help too. And it doesn't take them away from their own passion. In fact, it probably adds meaning to their own passionate purpose as well.
And you know, Mark, what's interesting about what you're saying, from my perspective, is this. So many people that I've been blessed to work with over the years will say to me, you know, wow, you've lived such a full life. And, you know, I consider myself in my juvenile business years. I'm only 44.
There you go.
But people say, you know, you've experienced so much. And my response to them is because, you know what? I let my passion take me where it was going to take me.
That's good.
And I think, you know, there are some times when your passion gets you in trouble.
Yes.
And so I once say that everywhere my passion took me was nirvana.
Right.
But when I look at where my passion has carried me, because I allowed it, I am so grateful for the people that I have met, for the experiences that I've witnessed.
Absolutely.
And you know, I have to tell you, I mean, I gave a presentation on gratitude some time ago. I mean, I was just so grateful for stuff. And, you know, this wasn't something that I just told people about. I didn't just say, yeah, I'm grateful. I mean, they could feel the gratitude coming out of me.
Yes.
And,
both when it's,
you know,
genuine, it resonates.
That's right. And so, you know, when people say, can I be passionate as well, you know, my thought is, well, here, take my hand. Let's go together.
Yeah, yeah.
And it can be a fantastic voyage.
Absolutely. And I'm so excited about Find Harry Tucker. I can't even get over. I'm moved beyond words to find out what's going to happen.
Well, you know, as you and I were kind of joking earlier, we were talking about the folks that hope to make a documentary out of this.
Yes.
And, you know, to read the one-page pitch as presented back to me.
Yeah.
Not something that I wrote, but as presented back to me. I mean, it so gripped me because here is our passion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, it's that young man's passion.
Right.
It comes to us and we magnify it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're passionate also.
Right.
And then we pass it on to folks like this producer, and he magnifies it again.
Yes, he certainly did.
And then when it comes back in that one pager, it's like, holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I mean, and it builds because I saw that and it drove me even harder today.
Oh, absolutely. When I saw it, I was ready to, you know, I didn't know what to do, but I was ready to pack up and go wherever I needed to go to get the word out more, you know. It just ignited me. It did.
Exactly. And this, you know, when we talk about the importance of passion, you know, I encourage people to not be afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a rule that I've used for different things over the years. It's called the rule of the 4 SWs. And so many people have laid claim to this rule that I don't know who to give credit to. But the 4 SWs, when it comes to leveraging or networking with passionate people, because not everyone is passionate. And it's not our place to make them passionate.
No.
If they want to be passionate or want to grow their passion, then we welcome them.
Mm-hmm.
But if they choose to perhaps express passion in a different way, that's okay also.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I always think of the 4 SWs. When it comes to finding people, if it's critical that you find people of equal or greater passion, some people, when they first allow their passion to be ignited and they run up against a few people who are either not passionate or just downright apathetic or indifferent, then they get frustrated. And they say, you know, the world loves apathy, so being a passionate person is not going to serve my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and the rule that I explained to them, the four SWs, goes some will, some want, so what? Someone's waiting.
I love it.
And, you know, so it's like, you know, there's 6.5 billion people on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your first forays into the world of passionate living, passionate leadership, may not always be gentle. It's not always gentle for those of us who have been living it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
You know, as you mentioned Susie, I expressed to Susie earlier today that sometimes being a passionate person is a lonely place.
Absolutely.
You know, because sometimes when the world has gone quiet and, you know, your family is asleep and you're just kind of just sitting there quietly and just kind of musing about the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your passion is finally, hopefully, starting to die down. And you start to think, oh, gosh, if only I could get someone to help me with this. Or,
right.
How do I motivate someone to help me with this? Or maybe I was too strong here and I frightened somebody
away.
Exactly,
yeah. Those quiet moments of contemplation.
Yep. And that's, you know, and so the world of the passionate person comes with phenomenal rewards. And I don't mean financial rewards. I'm talking about emotional, spiritual, just straight person to person.
Yeah.
And but there are times when you're sitting there at the end of your day and you're like, why do I have to be this passionate?
Yes, you certainly do.
I remember one time we were driving through a construction zone, and I said to this was some kind of unionized construction zone. And I said to my wife, I said, you know, what's interesting about this is at 5 o'clock, they can turn off this job and walk away from it.
Yeah.
And I said, there are days when I wish I could be like that.
Absolutely.
And
I know the feeling.
But then then I realized that I'm wired to be passionate.
Yeah. And you wouldn't change it for the world, would you?
Wouldn't change it for the world. You know, you're so right. The people who I have been blessed to know, including people on this call, yourself, and so many others, I am grateful for their appearance in my life, and I believe that their appearance in my life manifested because of their passion and mine. And when we drive our collective passions, we're almost destined to overlap at some point.
I think you're exactly right. Exactly right.
So what do you think, Mark, when you think about why people would hold back from being passionate? Mm-hmm. We touched on a few things.
Yeah.
In your professional work,
what
do you think are some of the reasons that people give for not wanting to be passionate?
You know, the first thing that comes to mind is change. That most people are don't want it, they don't seek it, but they don't realize that it happens regardless. That change is one of those guarantees. I used to say, you know, you say death and taxes are the only guarantees, but truly there are death, taxes, change, and opportunity. Those are four givens that we have, four guarantees. And I think change scares people. Particularly if they feel like they have a hand in that change. They would rather somebody else make a decision, somebody else be responsible for being right or wrong, particularly the wrong part. You know, so the change ball is tough. They would prefer the common, the familiar, even if that familiar is unhealthy or unhelpful, because it is familiar. They know what to expect. When you step outside that box, and I don't like to just think outside the box. I like to live outside the box. Thinking outside the box means I'm still in it. So I'd rather live outside that box, but I've got to understand what's in that box before I step outside. So, you know, change is risk. And I think that's one of the things that I find is the biggest deterrent to passion is change.
Wow. You know, something you said reminded me. There's a great book by Robert Fritz.
Mm-hmm.
Called The Path of Least Resistance. And in that book, Robert Fritz suggests that when people try to think out of the box, they're looking at the box so much to avoid thinking about it that they end up creating another one.
Ah, interesting.
And I love that. It's like, you know, I'm looking at the blue wall, and I want to paint it a different color, so I'm going to stare at it so much I end up painting another variation of blue.
Yeah. And it's different. Wow.
Well, Mark, I really, really appreciate this opportunity for you and I, two passionate people, to collaborate on this call today.
Well, I've been excited about it, and I just have loved every second. Just wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, and thank you. I know we have a few minutes left. I'm wondering if anyone out there, and I don't want everyone to kind of step on each other, but if anyone out there has a question for Mark or myself before the call concludes.
I don't have a question, but I just want to say thank you, because I'm a passionate person myself, and what you had to say gave me a lot of validation, so thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for sharing.
Well, and thank you for that. You know, you raise an interesting point, that some, it's really nice to get that validation to assure ourselves that we're not insane.
Right.
And I know I've been in that boat many times where, you know, your passion just got carried away with you, and then there's that awkward silence in the room after, and you think, maybe I'm crazy. Well, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments before we wrap up this call tonight?
Now, this is Peter. Peter Ayers, it is. And I have a comment. First of all, your conversations enlightened or just awakened some passion within me, and which was just, you know, just being in the presence of a passionate person, I think, has a tendency to spark that passion in other people if there's anything there. And then the other thing that occurred to me is that when we have a great passion, something that we're really passionate about, we start sharing, we want the other people that we're sharing with to somehow join in or be part of it or get excited about it the same as we are. And when that doesn't happen, sometimes I find that a little disappointing. I said, well, how come they're not as excited about this as I am? And and then when you find someone that is equally as excited as you are about your passion, that's some sort of a thrilling experience to me.
Yes.
You know, you're right, Peter. And what's I think what's really important about what you said is that it's really important for us to try as much as we can to make sure we stay plugged into other people with equal or greater passion. Because if we don't, if we spend too much time trying to create the passion in others, I think we eventually burn out.
That's a great point.
And so, I mean, what you're saying really resonates with me, Peter. You know, this concept of, I mean, I know at one point earlier in my life, I thought it was my mandate to make everybody passionate. And I don't know who I wore out more, them or me.
Yep.
But everyone's passion comes in time. There's a great book by Bill Hybels called The Holy Discontent. And he said, you know, the thing that ignites your passion and your purpose is the thing that bothers you the most, the thing that you think needs to be fixed most in the world. And he said, most people walk away from it, but if you'll turn towards it and walk towards it and embrace it and let it burn you, let it burn within you, and allow it to ignite your sense of purpose with passion.
Wow.
Well, I think we've got about 2 minutes left. I want to just talk about a couple of quick things where folks can reach Mark, where folks can reach myself. Mark, why don't you give your website and your email address, if you would?
Okay, sure. Website is www.awaken, awaken associates.net. and then my email address, and I welcome emails every day, is awaken2@tx.rr.com.
Thank you for that, Mark. And I'm pretty easy to find as well, www.harrytucker.com, all one word. And the best way to find me is to send me an email at harry@harrytucker.com. There's a couple of things, too, that I just wanted to mention. I'm planning, myself and another friend of mine, two friends of mine, actually, are planning a speaking tour for 2010. It's tentatively called A Journey Home, A Quest for Authenticity. And one of my associates and good friends, Leonard Simchek, who's just about to release a book called A Journey Home, and I will be chatting in December around, you know, how do you return back to your sense of self if you've become disconnected? How do you return back to that sense of purpose? And I think it ties in nicely with this call, because once you have returned to your authentic self, and you've embraced your authentic self, and then you ignite passion, as we talked about today, then who knows what you're going to accomplish. There's one quote that I would love to just share, and it's an Emerson quote, and I love Emerson quotes. And it's all around passion, but it's a passion for service. And Emerson said, "You and I can never do a kindness too soon, for we never know when it will be too late." And I think for me, that kind of thing motivates my passion, that, you know, we all have opportunities to do stuff, but when you're passionate about it, you get a chance to really make a difference, whether it's professionally in your teams or personally or across generations, as in this example that we shared with this family from Germany. And so I will passionately thank all of you for attending today. And Mark, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And let me thank both of you, both Mark and Harry, this is Peter, for participating in our Just About Perfect teleclass. This is going to be a great one to share, and it'll be a real treat for those people who weren't able to be here on the live call to have a chance to listen to the conversation between the two of you. And one more thing I'll just mention for those of you that are members of Just About Perfect, or guests of our Just About Perfect website, you can find Harry is in our coaching directory, and there, once again, you'll see his contact information, and he also participates in our coaching gym. So looking forward to your coming back again, Harry, for a third visit with us, and we'll keep tabs of your programs as you progress. Thanks again, and thank all of you that were on the call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. It was a privilege.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.